accession number 23138, Reel 4.
Mr. Child, Reel 4.
Anyway, we pushed up through Italy, and I got a bit war-weary, mentally and physically, I think. And I was moved to the 8th Army School of Artillery, posted to them. And we took on the task of training younger artillery officers coming through, and we used to go up to regiments and advise officers in the field and so on. And that was a very interesting job. I was an instructor in gunnery, which meant you had a red arm, a red thing. I was as battery commander, I'd been promoted major, and I had this red hat band, and it was very nice to wear and effective.
Where did this take place?
It was after during the winter after the fall of Rome.
No, whereabouts did it take place?
Oh, somewhere towards the north of Italy, moving up towards the north of Italy. Can't remember place names very well. Anyway, we moved up with behind the forces, and we moved into Austria, and I was commandant of the School of Artillery by this time. And I had my school on a lake in Austria, which was wonderful. The officers' mess was a hotel one side of the lake, and the school was a sort of convent the other side of the lake. And I used to row across the lake to work in the mornings. I mean, it was fabulous. Military commandant of a slice of Austria, as well as having responsibility for the school. And we continued to train officers. This time we were starting to train them now for the forces that were likely to go to Japan or to fight the Japanese in India or wherever. So that was a new slant on our work.
Which part of Austria was this?
This was the south of Austria, and the lake called Ossiacher near Klagenfurt. Very interesting part. Klagenfurt was interesting. I tried to get into Yugoslavia once, but there were some Russian soldiers on the on the road, which they kept saying "niet, niet, niet," which meant I suppose that I couldn't get past them. A lot of Russians at this time, because it was a southern part of their front coming into Austria, and it was a very interesting time. But then the war in Europe finished, V-Day, and we went on training officers for the Far East, and then Japan surrendered. And so the school could be closed, was closed. I remember somebody saying to me, "What would you like to do now?" So I rather cheekily, I thought, I don't know, I'd rather like to be town major of Rome. I thought that would be rather a good job. And I don't know whether the word got round or whatever. I don't think it could have done. But a week or two later, I got a posting area town major of Rome. Well, sounded marvellous. I went down to Rome and got involved in the administration of Rome area.
You mean you were in charge of Rome?
Well, militarily speaking, area. I had full contact with the local administration, and I had offices in the Piazza Venezia, which is the central square in Rome. My office was opposite the balcony where Mussolini made all his belligerent speeches in the Palazzo Venezia, and I was on the other side of the Piazza Venezia, and the other side of the square was what they call the wedding cake, the big white war memorial from the previous wars. Central Rome had these lovely offices, and I had lots of nice things there. A lot of hard work, but I had the use of the Royal Box of the Opera and lots of facilities, that again was a very interesting time. I had quite a lot of difficulties with the Americans who used to take the houses and the buildings that I'd reserved for British use after I'd put my mark over the board or whatever. And so I had quite a lot of arguments with the American top brass, but we sorted it all out.
Was it a case of first come, first served?
Well, it should have been, but I'm afraid the Americans sometimes slightly overruled that and tried to get their way when I wouldn't have it. So I had to put up a bit of a fight there. But anyway, we got on reasonably well together apart from that. Lots of nice things happened as well as the nasty things. I remember Gigli, the great Italian opera singer, tenor, had a charity concert in the Royal Opera House, and he had all sorts of stars from all over the place, including from England, Gracie Fields came out. And there's a lovely concert, but Gracie Fields astonished, rather than upset, astonished the opera fans, the Italian opera fans in the opera house by doing a cartwheel on the stage, something that had never been done on the very, very serious operatic stage, but it was a very good concert. All sorts of nice things happened there, but it, as I say, it was quite hard work. And then they started demobbing people. Now, the principle of demobilization was first in, first out. Well, I was early in, so I was very early out. So they put me on a troop train for England, and I had to give up the town majorship.
Can you tell me more about the problems you had to sort out in Rome?
Well, a lot of them were with property and taking over buildings and sorting out arguments and so on. We had a lot of English people, British people coming into Rome, and we had to find places for them, and a general sort of administration, but not political administration, not their own sort of private affairs. That carried on under their own organization.
What was the reaction of Italians towards Allied town majors?
Oh, very good. Great cooperation. I unfortunately only had a smattering of Italian, and because I had interpreters left, right and centre, everything I did was through interpreters, I didn't get to meet the Italians properly in the way in which I would have liked to. I mean, I would have liked to have quickly learnt enough of the language to be able to be more involved with the people locally, and that really annoy me a little, but it was a question of achieving what I had to as well as I could with what materials I had, and that didn't allow me to do the things that I would like to have done. But I did get round and went to a lot of the opera houses in Naples and Florence, and I saw then all the great Italian musicians and opera singers were available. Great orchestral conductor called Tullio Serafin was majestically in place at the Florence Opera House, and I did sort of integrate as far as I could with the Italians, but it was a question of organizing the British forces. We were having an Allied military government set up in Rome. It was a time of great flux and things rapidly happening. But because my demob number was very quickly reached, I was put on a troop train for demobilization at home, and I got back to Reading. To find waiting me a telegram which said, "Your demobilization cancelled, return to Rome immediately." Well, what had happened was that so many of the early people into the forces had become commissioned, and they ran short of officers in Italy and probably other places. And so I got this telegram. Well, I must confess I ignored it for 4 or 5 days and got to see the family and had a lovely few days at home, but I had to go back to Rome. But as I say, in getting home on the troop train, they made me train commander. And that was a great handicap because it meant that I had to be on duty and in charge of the troops all the way back to England, whereas most of the troops and the other officers were just relaxed and thoroughly enjoying things, but that couldn't be helped. Anyway, I got back to Rome and I went to see the brigadier, and he said, "Well, you know, your job's gone." He said, "Would you like to be commandant of the new rest centre for all Allied troops in the Mediterranean central areas? We're setting up a huge rest centre in Aquila, which is 100 miles north of Rome in the mountains." So I said, "Sounds great." So I went up there, and we had several hotels, lots and lots of billets, and a huge leisure centre, skiing, skating, stadium in the summer, swimming, tennis, cricket, horses, stables, really wonderful leisure centre. I worked on this, and I had a very good staff. They gave me a lady hostess, because we had a lot of ladies up from Rome, nurses and embassy staff, and it was really quite cosmopolitan gathering. We had all the Allied forces coming and to stay at this place Aquila while they had a good week or a good weekend leave before they went back to their units. And we had to ski run. Unfortunately, the ski lifts were broken during or the beginning of the war, so we had to bus people up from the bottom of the ski slopes to the top again so that they could take their runs and so on. But we organised all of that, and it was very good. In the hotels, we had the major hotel, the Grandier, I had a manager, Naldo Farver, who was always thereafter a great friend of mine and the family. He was a wonderful Italian hotelier. He was highly educated, public school in England, a lovely man, and he ran this particular the main hotel, the Grandi, beautifully. And every weekend we used to have a theme. One weekend it was a sort of cowboy ranch theme. The hotel was turned into a cowboy ranch, and the next weekend it was turned into something else. We had dinner dances every Saturday evening. And one Saturday evening I hired 100 costumes from the Royal Opera House in Rome, and they brought them up, put them in a room, and all the guests, before dinner, they had the option of going in and choosing a costume for the fancy dress ball, and the most wonderful costumes, of course, from the Opera House. The dinner dance, the fancy dress dance, was a terrific success. I remember I went as Mephistopheles, which didn't need an awful lot of makeup, really, but it was good from Faust, and I got a prize, I remember. But there was some wonderful, wonderful outfits, and that sort of thing. And then Sundays we had a concert, and I had the a lot of the stars in the Opera House up to sing and to play the piano and so on. Super classical concert every Sunday evening, and I used to give them, I think, somewhere about £5 each for coming, because they were very, very in very difficult straits, all these professionals at that time, and that was a lot of money to them, but it was great for us. One of them was a great friend called Siegbert Steinfeld, who was an ex-baritone lead from the Berlin State Opera, but he was a Jew and he was pursued throughout the war and landed up in concentration camps in Italy, and his wife was with him, and they escaped, and they came and stayed with me at Aquila. She was working in the Allied military government in Rome. She's an English girl. She's just written a book, which I passed around to my friends, of her life escaping from the Germans in the mountains with her husband. And they've been great friends of our family ever since in England here. Of course, in wartime, with changing circumstances, you meet the most wonderful characters. Interesting people from so many different styles of life. Anyway, that went on for a long time, and the winter changed into summer, and we had all the summer sports. But eventually, unfortunately, it had to close. It came to an end. The bank kept demanding, asking where I was. Had to go back to the bank. I hung on as long as I could. But I came back to England and found life just not too easy, because I had rather a hectic life, bad in parts, but towards the end I was very fortunate. I tried to get a job in the consular service, but that didn't work out. I turned down the contract. I could have got it, but I decided not to take it. But there weren't other jobs going. It was very difficult, so I was very lucky. I was supposed to go back to the bank. But the strange thing is that I went back to the bank in my little village in Goring, in Oxfordshire, as still as third man out of three, making the tea and doing all the things I'd done about 5 years earlier, although I'd been a staff officer and sort of been terribly lucky in the war. I must tell you, on the way back, I had an unusual experience. I had to come back from the rest camp. I took a vehicle, a regimental vehicle, to get me to the train depot in Austria, and I had to go through Venice, brigadier in charge of the Venetian area said that all officers going through Venice had to stop at the tented transit camp as they went through, as they stayed in Venice and went onwards. I didn't like the sound of that at the end of the war, a tented transit camp. So I crocked myself in at a very fine hotel on the Lido. But unfortunately, the brigadier is more or less overnight. No great deal, really. The brigadier got to hear about it and sent a message to me, you're under arrest, appear in my office at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Well, I'm afraid that that charge I tore up, and I got on the troop train, and I was back in England before anything could happen. And I don't know what happened to that warrant, and I don't suppose they bothered to pursue it. But little things like that happened all the time. That was the way things worked. Went back to the bank, number three, made the tea, sorted all the vouchers, did all the sort of menial jobs in the branch, which I didn't mind doing, but it didn't seem to be getting me anywhere. Eventually they got me up to head office, and I was lucky, because I suppose the confidence that the war had given me helped me, and I eventually got on quite well in the bank with lots of interesting experiences. Found difficult the first year or two getting back, because everybody around me had had difficult experiences of their own in the war, and many of them who were here throughout the war had very, very uncomfortable, perhaps boring but deadly sort of situations, and it was no good, none of us coming back ever strung a line or talked about our experiences, because that just wasn't acceptable to those people who'd who'd had a pretty miserable time all the time. But just getting back to civilian life in general was really quite difficult. But anyway, one gradually assimilated back into the way of life. And I got on quite well in the bank and ended up as manager of one of the larger banks of the Midland Bank. Lots of very interesting experiences along the line there. But
since this is about the war, if I can just interrupt you, if I can just go back to one or two things that you've said.
Yes, please.
You mentioned the North Staffordshires in Tunisia. Mm. Have you any memories of the guards there?
Yes. The guards were on Boer cars, not actually at the same time as I was, but they were at Medjez at the same time, and I had experience of seeing these guardsmen, these lovely 6-foot-odd guardsmen that I'd known, seen and worked with in England, in the Guards Brigade, seeing them fighting, and they were amazing. They were they would do things which you wouldn't believe that any human being could do, dashing at German posts, irrespective of the danger, and seeing them. It was horrid seeing them, some of them lying around the ground, having experienced them in slightly more normal conditions in England.
You mean their dad?
Yes, yes. I see in the paper this morning that one of the officers in the 1st Irish Guards has died. He was on Boer cars, apparently. It must have been about the same time as me. They were the guards were great. I had experience of the 1st Battalion of the Irish and the Welsh and 3rd Battalion of the Scots in the Guards Brigade. And when they got to Africa, they were very, very good, but very, very audacious in everything that they did.
When you were in Austria, did you see anything of the sending back of Russians and Yugoslavs to the east?
Not really. They were starting to filter through into areas south of Austria, into Klagenfurt particularly, but I really didn't have a lot of contact with them.
I mean those Russians and Yugoslavs who had been on the German side.
Ah, no, very little experience of that, I'm afraid.
How do you feel about having served in the Second World War now?
Well, it was a necessary war. The fact that Hitler had killed something like 4 million Jews, irrespective of the war, and was attacking Czechoslovakia, Poland, and other countries in Europe, made war, I think, with our outlook on Europe and the world, made it, I think, pretty inevitable. But it is the most horrifying thing, and I hope to goodness it never happens again, especially on a world scale, particularly on any scale, I suppose. I was privately terrified quite a lot of the time. Tried not to show it, of course, like everybody. Went through my little bit of difficulty, but then millions, hundreds of thousands and millions of people did exactly the same. I was lucky come out comparatively unscathed. And as I say, we in the British forces had, and I suppose the American forces had the same, we had the great comfort of knowing that there was a country to return to, provided we could do well, prevail in the war.